Liegen over een mondkapjesdeal die je hebt gesloten met de overheid. Een deal waarmee je miljoenen hebt verdiend. Dat doet toch alleen Siewert van Liende? Nou, nee. Ik ben Felicia Alberding en in de Mondkapjesmiljonairs duik ik met een team van correspondenten in andere schandalen. Want wist je dat Siewert helemaal niet uniek is? Luister de Mondkapjesmiljonairs in je Podimo-app. Of ga naar podimo.nl/mondkapjes. En probeer Podimo 30 dagen. Podimo.nl/mondkapjes.
De Bright Podcast brengt je elke week de nieuwste gadgets.
Het is gewoon de allerbeste Apple Watch die er is.
Technieuws.
Instagram heeft eerst een functie van de concurrentie afgekeken.
Commentaar.
Ik denk van, het was gewoon Volkswagen onwaardig, die oplossing.
En de beste tech tips.
Mijn favoriete boek was Helgoland van Carlo Rovelli.
Luister de Bright Podcast elke woensdag in je podcast app.
Wat een geweld.
Het is zo lekker om naar te luisteren.
We are facing two main problems. That's the workers shortage in general, but also the workers with the right skills.
We just decided that we don't want to see each other as competitors. We want to see each other working on the same agenda. And if we want to succeed with the green transition and also fighting the climate change that we're facing, we have to do it together.
We want to succeed on the same agenda, and this is the only way to achieve something, because the challenges are real and we cannot succeed on our own.
Dit is Betrouwbare Bronnen met Jaap Janssen.
Hallo, welkom in Betrouwbare Bronnen, aflevering 371. En welkom ook PG.
Dag Jaap.
PG, we gaan praten over misschien wel het allergrootste probleem bij de klimaat- en energietransitie. En ook bij de digitale sprong voorwaarts die we met z'n allen willen maken. Het enorme tekort aan vakmensen. In Nederland zijn er op dit moment zo'n 80.000 technische vacatures. En bijna 30.000 vacatures in de ICT. Banen op zoek naar mensen.
En je hoorde in de intro dat we daarbij als Nederland niet het enige land zijn dat daarmee worstelt. We hebben een hele serie buitengewoon interessante mensen uit heel Europa die hiermee in ons land deze dagen heel actief mee zijn. Want in Nederland is het toch nog een beetje de olifant in de kamer. Kijk nou naar bijvoorbeeld de algemene politieke beschouwingen.
We hebben weinig gehoord over het gebrek aan arbeidskrachten om al die transities mogelijk te maken.
Bestaanszekerheid kwam aan de orde, maar tegelijkertijd de sectoren, eigenlijk elke sector, de groene sector, de ICT, de zorg, het onderwijs, het OV, ja, eigenlijk elke sector zegt, tuurlijk bestaanszekerheid, maar wij willen vooral ook veel mensen hebben. Zoals jij zei, banen zoeken mensen.
Ja.
En dat is een heel interessant Europees fenomeen. Dat is echt niet alleen maar in Nederland gaande.
Nee, zeker niet. Ursula von der Leyen die meldde in haar State of the European Union dat ruim 70% van het MKB in Europa mensen tekort komt en werk moet laten liggen of klanten teleurstellen.
Tegelijkertijd zie je in heel Europa dat er nog hele grote delen zijn, hele regio's, waar bijvoorbeeld toch nog heel veel jongeren niet aan de bak komen. En er grote delen ook van de bevolking in zekere zin gemarginaliseerd zijn naar de arbeidsmarkt. Dat geldt bijvoorbeeld ook voor vrouwen die een tijd lang uit het arbeidsmarkt zijn geweest, niet de voldoende opleiding hebben voor de nieuwste economische technologische ontwikkelingen en daarmee dus geen aansluiting meer vinden. Denk ook aan gehandicapten. Dus dat zijn hele grote bevolkingsgroepen voor wie ondanks die te grote tekorten er toch nog onvoldoende toegang is tot werk.
En over al die tekorten en hoe je daar iets aan doet, vooral ook door samenwerking tussen bedrijven, tussen opleidingen en met hulp van de overheid, de nationale en de Europese, vond deze week in Amsterdam een congres plaats, een Europees congres, in het gebouw Circa op Sloterdijk, Forum on Vocational Excellence 2023. En wij zitten daar op dit moment, PG, en wij nemen daar deze aflevering van Betrouwbare Bronnen op.
Want dit was natuurlijk de kans om de experts op dit terrein en de meest inspirerende, succesvolle voorbeelden van waar het dus overal in Europa heel erg lukt te ontmoeten en bij elkaar te brengen. Dat zijn dus innovatieve samenwerkingsprojecten van, wij in Nederland zouden zeggen, VMBO, MBO, hoger beroepsonderwijs en ook beroepsgericht academisch onderwijs en heel belangrijk, levenlang ontwikkelen trajecten van bijvoorbeeld werknemers of mensen die al heel lang de school uit zijn, maar geen plek meer op de arbeidsmarkt vinden. Nou, op dat punt kan men in Europa dus heel veel van elkaar leren. Zowel de experts die dat soort problemen analyseren, vaak ook bij universitaire en research instituten, als ook de voorbeelden van die opleidingen. Die zeggen, wij doen die dingen al met bedrijven en vaak ook in hele interessante innovatieve sectoren.
We beginnen dadelijk ons gesprek met Chiara Riondino van de Europese Commissie. Daarna praten we met Paolo Nardi, die uit Italië komt. Dan is het woord aan Melanie Henke uit Duitsland. En ook nog te gast is Jacob Arler uit Denemarken. Ze hebben allemaal hun eigen verhaal, hun eigen invalshoek. Maar er is ook veel overeenkomst tussen de verhalen die ze vertellen. En ook nog bij ons zit Boudewijn Grievink van Catapult EU.
En het interessante is, zo'n Duitse mevrouw, die Denen, die hebben dus allemaal allianties in Europa van gelijkgestemde, bijvoorbeeld beroepssectoren, arbeidsmarktsectoren, bedrijven. En dat is echt in heel Europa. Die Denen werken met mensen in Roemenië, maar ook in Nederland. De Duitse mevrouw heeft een Hansa-parlement. Dat zit als het ware de hele Oostzeelanden, die net zoals in de middeleeuwen elkaar weer op zijn gaan zoeken en van elkaar leren. Buitengewoon interessante nieuwe vormen van samenwerking.
En onze laatste gast straks is Rossella Rico. Zij komt uit Italië. Ze werkt voor een heel groot uitzendbureau dat in heel Europa actief is, ook in Nederland. En zij loopt nog steeds aan tegen allerlei, wat wij misschien in Nederland wel zien als ouderwetse problemen, maar die toch nog steeds hardnekkig zijn. Bijvoorbeeld de achterstand van vrouwen in wat we vroeger wel mannenberoepen noemden.
Ja, en daarbij speelt dus voor zo'n bedrijf ook weer dat ze in verschillende landen verschillende manieren van samenwerken met verschillende soorten beroepsonderwijs. Want Europa is op dat punt ook weer heel divers. Nou, daarvan leren en daar als we de beste voorbeelden bij elkaar brengen, ook met oog op het versneld ontwikkelen van leven lang ontwikkelen voor werkenden, is de grote uitdaging. En we zeiden het al, een beetje de olifant in de kamer in Nederland.
Ja, een heleboel namen. Ik zal ze straks nog een keer één voor één voorstellen. Hun namen en nog meer informatie kun je vinden in de beschrijving van deze aflevering. En we doen het met onze Europese gasten uiteraard in het Engels. Maar PG, er zijn nog meer namen, want zijn er nog nieuwe vrienden van de show?
Jaap, die zijn er. En daarom heel veel dank aan jou, Anke, en ook aan Toon en aan Maret, Henriette, aan Willem en Mathieu.
Er zijn ook nog enkele losse donaties binnengekomen, namelijk van Giel en van Nora. Ook jullie zeer veel dank. Wil jij ons ook helpen? En als je ons regelmatig steunt, dan word je vriend van de show. Ga dan naar vriendvandeshow.nl/bb. En ook een vriend van de show, althans een luisteraar, is Sven Kokkelman van het televisieprogramma Op 1. Luister maar.
Met fossiele subsidies moet je stoppen.
Ja, gaan we, maar komen
wat,
we, komen we
nee, maar wat kun je dan doen met dat geld dat je daarvan ophaalt? Hè? En dan stellen wij dus voor, investeer dat dan terug. Ja. Een miljard per jaar in schone bedrijven. En geef elke Nederlander een klimaatbonus, zodat je ook die duurzamere keuzes kan maken.
Ja, maar Thijs had het over het jaartal. En ik hoorde u laatst in de podcast Betrouwbare Bronnen zeggen, hou nou toch eens op met die jaartallen. En dat ging dan over het stikstofjaartal 2030.
Dit is Betrouwbare Bronnen.
Onze eerste gast is Chiara Riondino, hoofd beroepsonderwijs en training bij de Europese Commissie in Brussel. Welcome to our podcast, Chiara Riondino. You are Italian, we talk in English, but you were able to understand what we said so far in Dutch?
I did. I was able to. Dankjewel. En goedemiddag, goede avond, goedemorgen, ik weet het niet. So thank you very much for inviting me to this podcast, because this is the European Year of Skills. So thank you for giving me the opportunity to come here and talk about vocational education and training in this fantastic event in Amsterdam, the Forum of the Centers of Vocational Excellence.
Why did the European Commission think it was necessary to have a European Year of Skills?
Skills are really more and more important in everyday life and in the labor market. So we have this very weird year because it's not a calendar year. We started in May on the 9th of May, which is Europe's Day, and we will go on until the 8th of May next year. So we still have a lot of months to go. And what we wanted to do during this year is to really try to match people's aspirations with the needs of the labor market, because it's only by helping more people into the labor market and helping more people do jobs that they really like and they are passionate about that we can build together a fairer society, a competitive society, an inclusive society.
And of course, the companies and the organizations and institutions in Europe, they need the people, because we have everywhere great shortages in those skills and the people with those skills.
Absolutely. And we have a paradox because we have the lowest unemployment rate in a long time. And we're very happy about it because with COVID, we really faced a lot of challenges in this area. But we also see that companies have shortages and cannot fill their gaps. And a lot of people are still not finding the right match. So we need to work together with companies, with schools, with institutions, with public authorities to find the good match that will make a win-win for everyone.
Yeah, I listened to Ursula von der Leyen in the State of the European Union, and I heard her telling us that about 70% of the small and medium enterprises have a shortage of people. So 70%, that's a very big gap.
It's a very big gap also because we see that these gaps are hindering innovation and they're also hindering investment. So we don't have companies that say, we want to start this new business, we want to go into this direction, we want to be greener, we want to move towards a more sustainable way of working, just because they don't find people with the right skills for that. And of course, for small and medium enterprises, the challenge is much higher than for bigger companies.
And in some ways, there's another big problem, and that's the basic digital skills of everyone in Europe. And there's an official goal of having 80% of the European adult population having those basic digital skills by 2030. Are we going to achieve that?
I think we are. I want to be optimistic. I think we are. I think that digital is everywhere. It's not only in our jobs, but it's also if you want to access public services, if you want to access to your health file, if you want to book a trip. It's really everywhere. And being able to use a smartphone, it's not necessarily the only way that we can acquire digital skills. And I would also start to argue that digital skills are also a softer kind of skill, so a critical thinking, because we are faced with so much information coming from so many different sources that we have to understand how to discriminate which are the trusted sources and which are not. So I think the technical skills will combine with also critical thinking and the ability to sort out and process information. And these are all, in my view, the digital skills that
we
need.
But the trouble with the year in which you want to reach that goal of 80%, 2030, you can tell us at what level we have to be already in 2023. And does that level match with the goal in 2030?
I think we really need to, as we say in Italian, we have to throw our heart over the obstacle. If we start thinking about the scale of the challenge, we might tell ourselves we will not reach it. We are doing as much as we can at EU level with this European skills, partnering up with regions, with local communities, with libraries to say, how can we all move together? We also have another target, which is a 60% of adults learning every year by 2030, again, in the pillar of social rights. Of course, these are together. The more we advance on giving access to training and to learning to everyone, including adults, the more we will advance on the specific targets on digital skills or other kind of skills.
What we want to have in Europe is sort of a learning culture in which everybody is always involved.
Absolutely. I think if we can manage to achieve this, even move a little bit forwards in this direction with the European skills, it will have been a success.
I already mentioned the State of the European Union. Ursula von der Leyen also remarked that almost 40 years ago, Jacques Delors convened a meeting in the Belgian Val Duchesse that saw the birth of European social dialogue. And she announced, we will convene a new social partner summit at Val Duchesse to focus on the challenges facing the labour market. I suppose all those things that you are concerned about are one of the main points of that conference.
Absolutely. Skills is going to be key, like it has been a leitmotif of this commission since its beginning. But of course, the summit will be broader. There will be talks about also working conditions, all the things that we see with technology, right to disconnect, platform work. There are so many changes that are going so fast that it's right that we now get together again at Val Duchesse once again to discuss what it means now for the European social economy. economy and for the labor market and society.
Everywhere in the European Union now there are so-called centers of vocational excellence. Can you tell us a little bit about them?
The Centers of Vocational Excellence are one of my favorite projects because it really shows how the richness of the European diversity. These are partnerships between vocational education training institutions, companies, public authorities that work on, in a specific field. It's completely bottom-up. We provide funding through our Erasmus Plus project, but we don't tell the applicants you have to work on this or that. You have typically one organization that is working on some specific challenge, for example, water management, waste management, or microelectronics. And they're saying, look, we are doing a lot of work here. We would like to show and partner up with other people across Europe, but also outside of Europe. And we want to see how you're doing this, how you're facing this particular challenge. And then the project is born and everybody wins, I would say, because the more advanced institutions can really advance even more. And those that wanted to face the same challenge, but they didn't know how to do it, learn from each other. So I think they're really a beautiful project that illustrates European partnerships at its best.
So all those different centers throughout Europe can be inspirational for others in Europe.
Absolutely. And we try our best to give visibility. This forum has been a wonderful occasion to see the many different sectors in which the centers are active. And what we hope that we can do is also to mobilize more investments, because there are other European funds that can be used, like the Recovery and Resilience Facility, the European Social Fund, but also national funding that can see the value in this kind of working together in an ecosystem at the regional level, at the local level, really involving everyone. So yes, we hope that we will be an inspiration for more of these kind of projects.
You of course are from the European Commission, so you are working with the European funds, the European money. Are there enough funds on the national levels everywhere in Europe?
Oh, on the national level, I do not know. I know that now there is really a lot of money at EU level because we have this Recovery and Resilience Facility that is more than 600 billion euro that was started after COVID. And I see that a lot of countries have decided to spend part of this money also on skills and some also on some projects that are similar to the Centers of Vocational Excellence. So there is a lot of money. It's not always super easy to use European money because you have to respond to a lot of planning and auditing and things. But at least the money is there, and we hope this will move the needle a little bit.
We talked about inspiring examples throughout Europe, and with us we have three of those pioneers. And the first one we welcome is Paolo Nardi, also from Italy. He's director of EFET, a European-wide professional association which has been created by and for providers of technical and vocational education and training in all European countries. Welcome, Paolo Nardi, to our podcast.
Thank you for inviting me.
And you are also working in Brussels?
Both in Brussels and across Europe, visiting our members, projects, and wonderful conferences like this forum.
And what is your daily business?
Oh, basically, I'm the director of this organization. So basically, I work in three areas. Relationship with the members, trying to empower them. Directing my office, so main business. And third, at strategic level, what we would like to do is, let's say, in a bottom-up perspective, try to influence and vehiculate needs, challenges coming from our members to the policymakers.
And especially you are working with the GIVE project. What is the GIVE project?
Oh, the GIVE project is the Governance for Inclusive Vocational Excellence project. Is one of the Center of Excellence project which has been approved now 3 years ago. And it's a project about inclusion in vocational training.
And inclusion means people with a disadvantage.
Exactly.
Helping them to reach the labor market and
to find the right training approach, training methods, the right transition to work, and the right and just and adequate environment in the company level. So the GIVE projects tries to work on these levels in order to influence, to create, to develop inclusive methodologies.
So what you do is you build bridges between people who are having trouble finding the right education, the right training and jobs, and you build those bridges between those people and their chances.
To be honest, we do something slightly different, because there are already a lot of wonderful examples. We basically started not from ideas, but from concrete experiences. And I mean, it's wonderful. If you look around Europe, there is a wonderful skill centers in Finland working with migrants. There is a wonderful vocational training center in Como, Italy, Cometa, dealing with people a difficult background, dropouts or unemployed. There is a company in the Basque country employing 2,000 people with disability. 2,000. It's impressive. Now, is it possible to take all these expertise, these experiences, modeling them and make them scalable, transferable in other contexts? This is GIVE.
So that from all those various examples in Europe, which are, let's say, a sort of a key success factor, can be sort of translated and almost copied, of course, in another culture, another nation, with another system, but can be transferred.
Exactly. This is the ambition. So basically, as part of our project, we are creating a scientific framework, because the first point is culture. Our society cannot be inclusive if we don't create, facilitate, empower a culture of inclusiveness. So we are creating a scientific framework. We are modeling those practices. We are transforming those practices into training materials to activate training courses. And in this way, we want to train other trainers, managers, policymakers.
So you have to also to train the teachers.
Exactly.
In those new successful methods.
Exactly. Because, not only teachers, because when it comes to inclusion, it concerns didactical approaches, but also management issues, but also governance, because maybe you need very wise policymakers at local, national or European level. So we have several examples at the three levels in this quintuple helix that we call it, and we want to work with all of them. And maybe we have something to teach, also a lot to learn. So basically the main, I think, interesting points of this center of excellence is the creation of a community of experts.
What is your favorite recent discovery in Europe of an example of this?
I was just mentioning, because it's in my heart, this social cooperative L'Antique Batuac in the Basque Country. Very interesting. 2,000 people with disability working there in different sectors, from restaurant to electronics. And it's very interesting because they developed inside the company training centers. So basically they train with the support of the local vocational training centers. They train their people, but in accordance with their initial capabilities. And they support them, thanks also to a very interesting policy by the Basque government. They support their transition to job, and their job is, if it doesn't work well, they can be back to these social cooperatives thanks to a financial support of the government. This is interesting.
So you have local vocational institutions. You have companies that would say, we need people, and we're happy they're coming. And you have policymakers at the regional level. And this is sort of an integrated approach.
Yes. And talking about this quintuple helix, we have universities. Because the real question is, for me, okay, we have this wonderful approach. Okay, does it work? We need numbers. We need analysis of these numbers. So we need people doing research, able with the right methodologies to analyze those data. And we need also development agencies or associations which can help us in vehiculate our results, our products, exactly like our community of practice of the Center of Excellence that is organizing this forum.
Earlier you said the aim of being inclusive has to be in front of our brain and part of our culture. In your project, you are working with very different European countries like Belgium, Finland, Italy, Malta, Romania, Spain. I learned also Belarus and Tunisia are involved. And those are different cultures on their own. What's the idea of working with so many different cultures on this very important goal, of course?
This is a very difficult question. On one hand, I would say we have different cultures, different approaches. But what is really interesting to me, the more I also do my job as director of EFVET, a European-wide organization, is that people have different cultures but share the same heart. And this is very interesting. And this is basically what we look at, what we want to empower when we work with our learners in different contexts. We look at them in a personalized way, in a personalized, of course, in a specific context, but in the inner side of every learner, of every manager, there is the same heart, the same desire to make a difference in the life, to make a difference in their context. So to some extent, we are all the same.
Of course. Thank you, Paolo. Please stay with us and join the conversation. With us also is Melanie Henke from Germany. You are working at the Hanse Parliament. What is that?
The Hanse Parliament is a non-governmental organization based in Hamburg, and our goal is to support small and medium-sized enterprises. We do that since 1993. And initially, we started with a focus on the Baltic Sea region, which was next door. That's also where our name Hanse Parliament derives from.
Because I was thinking, you must be from the 14th century. You must be very old.
It feels like it. I'm a historian,
so my heart opened when I read about the Hanse Parliament. But you're not very old.
Me, myself, I'm actually also not very old. But apart from that, we have been quite active in supporting small and medium-sized enterprises. And recently, we have been more and more also doing projects that are funded by the European Union, so Erasmus Plus projects. And one of the projects is also a Centers of Vocational Excellence project.
Yeah, and I understood that in your NGO, about 50 chambers of commerce are working together, and 21 universities, and of course, small and medium-sized enterprises.
Exactly. We try to reach our network through the chambers of commerce and of crafts, mostly. That is our approach, because this way we can reach many, many companies in different countries. So we have partners in all over Europe by now.
Yeah, and your project is called Three Levels of Excellence, Establishing Centers of Vocational Excellence on the Green Economy. What do you mean by three levels of excellence?
Yes, the three levels of excellence are mainly the initial vocational training, that's the first level, the continuing vocational training, so reskilling and upskilling, and the third level is the higher education level.
Ah, so they can continue within those centers of vocational excellence to the top level.
Exactly. So we try to create learning paths that include all of these different levels that are interconnected. And yeah, we try to enhance the permeability to go from one level to the other, if wanted.
About 74% of Europe's SMEs are facing skills shortages. So there's very much to do.
Yes, exactly. We are facing two main problems here in this project. So that's the worker shortage in general, but also the workers with the right skills. So here our approach is really to equip them with the green skills, also with digital skills. I think this goes hand in hand. And in our project, we do not focus on one specific sector, but we take green economy as an overarching topic for all the different sectors.
Yeah. Is there a secret to get more people, young people, but also older people, into vocational education?
Yeah, so there's different approaches to making vocational education and training more attractive. So first of all, we start also with the teachers. We train the teachers. We equip them with the right methods, with innovative teaching tools. And then what we focus on is really make the training practical. So we try to bring in the companies. We try to offer work-based learning. So project-based learning as well in the companies where we have the practical skills also.
And this, of course, means that the companies must change internally also. They must become sort of an educational environment.
Yes, and this is new for many companies. And especially if we talk about small, really small companies, this is not an evident thing. So we also offer trainings for the companies and we invite the companies into the schools. The other way around, we bring the teachers into the companies, the students into the companies. So we really try to facilitate this exchange on an eye level.
Now, I read that you work in this project with companies and schools in the Baltic countries, in Poland. And how does that work in the, because they are very interesting countries, but very different countries in their cultures and their background, also historical, of course. How does that work? How do you get these people to work together?
Yes, so in the project we have seven different countries and in each one of them we are setting up a so-called Center of Vocational Excellence. So within the project we have the general structure that in each country we have a vocational education and training center or a school. Then we have SME, a representative, a chamber of commerce, for example, and we have the university partners. So that is the basic setup, to have all the three levels covered in each country. And then they work really locally, regionally, according to what is relevant in their region. So they find more associate partners to work with.
What is your favorite recent discovery within, let's say, Latvia or Lithuania?
I was really happy to visit Lithuania recently and to see that they not only innovated their teaching, their curriculum. They found also company context, but they also really rearranged their whole school. So they renovated the school. They made it equipped with all the green possible energy sources. So they really changed the whole mindset of the school. The downside of the story maybe is that they had to let go of a lot of teachers because they simply didn't fit this new mindset. So they are trying to find really the right teachers to bring in this new mindset of this green and connected world.
And what happens to all those teachers who are to leave the schools?
Well, I'm sure they will easily find another job because there's also teachers lack of teachers. So. Yes.
So there will be no unemployed teachers in Lithuania because of your work?
No, I'm sure.
Thank you so far, Melanie Henke. Please stay with us. Talking about the green economy, with us is also Jakob Arle from Denmark. You are from OK Nygaard, the largest landscaping company in Denmark, and you are making cities greener and sustainable?
Mm-hmm. Yes, we are.
How many employees do you have?
We're also part of ID Verde, and ID Verde Denmark has 1,000 employees. Throughout Europe, we have 10,000 employees. So thereby, we are the largest landscaping company in Europe.
So that's a very, very big company altogether.
Yeah, but it also consists of a lot of small entities. In Denmark, for instance, we have no entities larger than 150 employees. So you could consider us as a lot of small entities within the same brand.
What does landscaping do?
We are facing climate changing. We are facing biodiversity crisis. And we are changing the ways our cities look like. We make them greener. We make them adaptive to the rainfalls, and we store the water in roofs and in rain gardens as well.
So the cities will look different with your work in the coming decades.
Just think of instead of making a city green, you make green in the cities, right? So think of living in a forest. That's what it should look like in the future, if you ask me. So we've used decades in making pavements and concrete all over the place. So now we're tearing it up again and making it green. And that is not just in order to to comply with the climate changes, but also because we want to make it a good place to live. So it's also about having happier people living in the cities.
You are involved with a project called E-Plug.
Yeah.
What is E-Plug?
E-Plug is the European platform for urban greening. It consists of 6 different countries. And in every country, there's a school, there's a company, and we work together in finding good solutions for urban greening throughout Europe.
Of course, Denmark is involved, Belgium, the Czech Republic, Finland, Romania, Spain, the Netherlands also with the company, the Koninklijke Ginkel Groep in Veenendaal.
Yeah.
So that's a company like your company.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly the same. And we do the same. But despite of that, we work together in finding new solutions. Because if we want to make greener cities in the future, we have to think differently than we did 5, 10 or 15 years ago. And it also complies to the educational industry. So we really have to change the educational system. And we don't think that we can do that on our own. We have to do that as a system. We could change the green agenda sector by sector, but we believe that we can be stronger if we do it as a system.
Because the people you had, let's say, 20 years ago in the landscaping were completely differently trained, I guess, than the younger people that you are now working with.
Yeah, because the solutions we have to do now, come up with now, are different than they were 20 years ago. 20 years ago, you just make a pedestrian area. Now you have to make a wadi, which is a pit for rainwater, basically.
So the people you had already working in the companies also have to be completely retrained or have to relearn their trade.
Yeah, and in Denmark alone, we need around 150 to 200 new employees every year. So it just emphasizes that we have 1,000 employees all over, but we are changing them and we're also growing as a company. So we need just around 150 to 200 new employees. And that's just for Denmark and our part of Denmark. And as if I'm not mistaken, we have 15-18% of the market right now.
It's not always easy for people, for persons, to change their mind and to learn and want to learn new things, a new way of working and living. We already heard from Melanie that some teachers are not ready to change the way they need to change.
Yeah.
Do you also experience those problems?
Maybe I do, but we come around it by making new educations together. The vet schools, the educational system, working together with the companies, because we want to meet the need from our customers. And in order to do that, we have to cooperate with the schools in making new educations. So some of our workers are really, really skilled and they have a lot of experience. So why shouldn't you put that into the school?
So you use also experienced, skilled people new teachers.
Exactly. We need the clever hands, not just the clever heads. Because when a gardener turns 40, he or she will usually have 20, 25 years of experience. So why shouldn't you use that?
If you could give our listeners a tip for a city that you say, that city, you should go and look at it.
Yeah.
What they are doing is this sort of this green landscaping revolution.
I think Utrecht could be a good example for all the Dutch listeners. But I think the green transition is
Utrecht.
Sorry for my pronunciation. But I think the green transition is going on all over Europe. So just look for the small bits and look for the big things as well. But you see the green transition within the cities all over Europe and all over the world, actually. Singapore would be a good place to go. I have to add something to the Ginkel Group because we really work well with them, even though they're one of our biggest competitors in Holland. But we just decided to share our knowledge with each other because, as I said before, we believe that we can change the system better together than just working one company competing or fighting another one.
That's interesting. You can enhance competitiveness by sharing knowledge.
Yeah. That's what we believe in, and we do that in the frame of the European Platform for Urban Greening.
So this European platform is also a sort of a knowledge system for those companies, even if they are competitors.
Yeah, we just decided that we don't want to see each other as competitors. We want to see each other working on the same agenda. And if we want to succeed with the green transition and also of fighting the climate change that we're facing, we have to do it together. We will not succeed just as a single company, and it doesn't matter how large it is. We have to work together on this one.
In essence, that is the key idea behind the European Union.
Well, in that case, we are doing what the European want us to do. And that's great, yeah.
Talking about the European Union, Chiara Riandina, you are working in the EU policy cockpit, the European Commission. What do you think about what you heard so far?
It has been really inspiring. Many things I knew already, some things I just discovered today. And I think this is really what we work for. And I will take this back with me, share it with my colleagues, share the podcast, share the vibes from the forum. And the best thing is that this is just ongoing. It's not just one thing that is happening today. There will be another occasion to meet next year. But in between, there is all of this work, all of this passion. And you can see, it doesn't matter if you are competitors. We want to succeed on the same agenda. And this is the only way to achieve something, because it's the challenges are real and we cannot succeed on our own.
Yeah, this is really an amazing thing. Working together in Europe and making all of us stronger. Jakob?
I would like to give an example of how we work together in the European Platform for Urban Greening, because last week we gathered just shy of 100 different people from all over Europe, 14 different nationalities. It was students, it was startup companies, and it was established companies as my own. And we worked with 10 different cases from the startups. Problems they have been working on for 1.5 years, some of them. And within 30 hours, with the help from the students, we came up with solutions that the startup companies didn't think of. So it's just an example of how the schools and the students can help us solve the problems of tomorrow.
During this forum, I was struck by one very clear message from, let's say, the audience, so the participants from all over Europe. And that is, we're doing fine with the centers of vocational excellence, but we need to scale up. You know, there's always the danger of successful experiments in education that they remain a successful experiment and the rest simply continues in the old ways. Now, what is the way you could, as European Commission, let's say, give this boost to scaling up?
Well, this was actually one of the objectives of the European Year of Skills, and it will continue to be, is really to showcase these amazing opportunities, this amazing excellence in vocational education and training, or the excellence in cooperation in bringing together people that come from different fields and different walks of life. And this is what we will continue to do, because we really believe that it is a matter of shifting the mindset. It is a matter of agreeing together that maybe we cannot continue to teach in the same way that we were teaching even 20 years ago, that maybe we should not be talking to education and training on one side, to companies on the other side, to civil society on another. It's really that we need to work together. As I said, we have a lot of money now at EU level. There is money going around in the private sector, in the public, national funding, and we just need to show this works. And policy experimentations are good in a way that they give you the safety net and they tell you, you know, you don't have to put all your eggs in this basket without knowing if it will work. We are telling you this basket works. So invest safely and challenge yourself to do the same. And together, I already heard many, many people that were saying, oh, I'm going back home and I'm going to propose this and I'm going to do that. So these are important models to showcase because they work.
So that's also an important reason to have a Congress like the Congress this week, to inspire each other throughout the European Union.
Absolutely. And once again, this was a Congress that showed a lot of passion, because people really believe in what they are doing, and they believe in what they're doing because they see that they have a positive impact. It's not just people that are coming together to throw some ideas in the air. They are really people who are making things happen. They're making things happen in their own communities, with students, with families, with companies. And it showed. Today it showed. And it showed last year when we were in San Sebastian. And I think it will continue to show through the hackathons and all the other initiatives that we don't see that happen every day all over Europe, involving students and all of us trying to think out of the box and really challenge ourselves to achieve something new.
So also students from all those countries meet each other through this project.
Absolutely. Yeah, this is the people that we are doing it for. So if we wouldn't involve the students, we would be crazy.
This is the voice of Boudewijn Grievink. Welcome, Boudewijn. You are the head of Catapult EU, the coordinating organization of all those projects. Catapult is a Dutch name because it started originally in the Netherlands.
Well, I'm going to correct you on the coordinating of all these projects part, because that's what we do not do. But it is correct that the Centers of Vocational Excellence, when they started, the European Commission did look at the Basque region and the Netherlands to our experience that we have with the public-private partnerships in VET. And as over the last years, we have been working with the Dutch schools to reach out to partners all across Europe to see if we can really stimulate this collaboration, share the knowledge we have in the Netherlands, but also really learn from other regions, because there's so much going on all across Europe. And we would be stupid not to learn from that. And that's also the reason why we brought together all the Centers of Vocational Excellence in this community of practice to really learn from each other and make sure that we do not reinvent the wheel over and over again, because that would be a waste of everyone's time.
So on the European level, they asked you to tell others about the Dutch experience.
Well, when the program was created, the Commission came to the Netherlands to see, okay, what are the characteristics of how it's working in the Netherlands? That input has been provided. But what we're doing with the community of practice is really at the request of all the project leaders in all these different countries, saying, okay, we are working on something beautiful, and let's do that together. So it's not something that's coming from the Dutch, but it's really coming from bottom up. And from our side, from Catapult, we are trying to chip in our best to facilitate that and to make sure that we connect with all those people.
Because one of the characteristics of the Dutch approach is that it is already a little bit ahead in scaling up. So this is something which you probably can bring to the successful regions and examples. So, okay, you're doing fine, but what are now the next steps? And next steps are probably not you do the same thing twice.
Exactly. You're absolutely right. In the Netherlands, we have the Regionaal Groeifonds MBO. Of Regionaal Investeringsfonds MBO, I have to say. And this has been evaluated a couple of times by external people as well. So it's not just us saying this. But what we see is that these projects quite often are able to set up the collaborations, involve many people, and are able to go beyond the project phase. So really go from a project to a movement, so to say. And I think that's very important, because that proves that the project and the movement is viable. But if you want to take the next step and expand to other regions or really involve more students and share that, that's something that needs an additional push. And in the Netherlands, we have the National Growth Fund Initiative, for instance, that's trying to do that. And I'm very curious to see how this will develop in Europe, because we have the amazing Center of Vocational Excellence arrangement in the Erasmus program. We see the projects tapping into other national funding as well, trying to create synergies. It would be great to see if we can give this movement another push to make sure that as much teachers, companies and students are benefiting from this approach of really working together.
Yeah. At the Congress this week, I saw a map of Europe with bullets of places where public-private partnerships are already. And I saw many, many bullets, the most of them in a small cluster together in the Netherlands.
You're absolutely right that the Dutch vet schools and University of Applied Science are quite active in the Centers of Vocational Excellence. And I think that's partially to do with that we have been working together in these public-private partnerships and want to scale up. We want to give the vocational education students the international experiences, for instance, because it was discussed this morning how important it is for students to get these life skills. And on the other hand, we also see that many of the schools in the Netherlands also realize, okay, we have a great system, But also, there's other places across Europe that we can learn from. So, the Basque region was mentioned a couple of times already. The way they are working together with companies and schools, also in innovation and applied research, is amazing. And I think that's also stuff that we can take to the Netherlands. So it's not just the Dutch, spreading the word across Europe, but also really learning from, our European family, so to say.
What would you say after the Basques and the Dutch will be the next champions in this in Europe? Which are regions where you say you see it's really happening there?
Ooh, that's a very good question. I think, surprisingly, we see a lot of regions that people feel like, okay, well, maybe they are not that advanced, but if you look at the progress they are making, they are going extremely quick. And if I look at our partners, I'm also part of the European Platform of Urban Greening, for instance, in Romania. Like within 2 years, they've completely, rearranged the educational system, created like urban greening, trainings, programs. So they are going so quickly, taking enormous steps, and that has an enormous impact also on cities like Bucharest in making sure that these cities are, adaptable to the climate change that is coming.
Do you also work with the whole group with cities and schools in Ukraine?
We do have some projects that do have contacts in Ukraine, and we are definitely also looking at, how can we help as centers of vocational excellence? For instance, in the platform of vocational excellence water, there's a lot of expertise on training people also digitally in how to repair like water systems. And we do know that the Russians are attacking those facilities. So we're definitely looking at the opportunities to support the Ukrainians in these kind of ways and providing that kind of knowledge that we have in the platform.
So for the next European Commission, let's say Ursula II or maybe somebody else, what would be the message? Would it be scaling up?
Yes, I would say so. I think on the one hand, we see like a lot of applications coming in every year that are scoring very well. So there is definitely a big motivation from the grassroots level to get this movement going. And I think we really have to cherish that motivation and tap into that. And I think there is definitely opportunities to make this initiative bigger and go beyond the current project period of Erasmus, but also into the next one, for instance.
Our next guest is Rossella Rico. May I thank Chiara Riondino, Paolo Nardi, Melanie Henke, Jacob Arler and Boudewijn Grievink. Thank you very much.
Dit is Betrouwbare Bronnen, een podcast met betrouwbare bronnen.
Zo, dat waren net allemaal hoopgevende verhalen. Maar er zijn toch nog wel wat extra problemen op de arbeidsmarkt in Europa. Bijvoorbeeld, hoe betrek je mensen met een achterstand op de arbeidsmarkt erbij? En hoe zit het als er bijvoorbeeld niet genoeg faciliteiten zijn om vrouwen in een mannenberoep erbij te halen? Bijvoorbeeld door gebrek aan kinderopvang. Daarover gaan we nu praten. Our next and last guest is Rossella Rico. She is a human resources expert at the GI Group, a big employment agency, and collaborates with the University of Milan with a special expertise in diversity management. Welcome to our podcast, Rossella Rico.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
Can you tell us about your day-to-day work?
Yes, I work in order to make research on HR topic and labor market topic. So I start to look at the reality, finding out what are the criticalities that we can find out, and looking what happens around us in order to find also solution, possible solution, and try to identify what can be best fit with our context. And then we propose this kind of solution to GI Group Holding, and GI Group as first actor start to try to implement it in its daily work. And after he try to work on that, he disseminate what it's happened.
So your main topic is to get rid of all those gaps on the labor market.
Yes, it's one of my principal work. And of course, I'm passionate of inclusion, of diversity inclusion. So the lenses of diversity inclusion and equity are always on my eyes. So these are part of my work.
And you say that you sort of try it out within the GI group, and then it is disseminated. Disseminated to other companies or to educational institutions, and only in Italy or also outside of Italy?
We work with both companies and educational partners, and both at the national and international. I'm here, I'm disseminating in an international context, but at the same time we speak with other companies in order to try to let them know that it's possible to change. One of our motto is change lives. We want to change lives through our work. And it's possible, but we need to change in advance our way to see the reality and to act in this reality.
If you look at the European labor market, what are the hardest, most difficult obstacles for inclusion?
The most relevant obstacle for inclusion is, as I said, the process of change. I mean, all of us are more habit to do the things as always we have done it.
Yeah, we like it.
Yes, we like it. And we try to have like a simplification of the reality throughout our lenses that are biased. Every one of us has biases on gender, on the possibility that some kind of work can be made by one kind of person and not by another. So these kind of biases are a barrier, a real barrier. Even if they are cultural, they create a real barrier to the possibility to people to enter and to stay in the market and to develop in it.
So, and of course, as Europe has this incredibly diverse history and culture and languages, these obstacles will probably be very different in different labor markets.
Yes.
In different countries. And even within countries, there will be remarkable differences.
Yes, it's true. It's a problem that is felt in different way in different countries. I mean, in America, they are talking about diversity inclusion since 1990. Here in Italy, we started with some pioneer thought to speak about diversity inclusion, but only nowadays, we are working really on diversity inclusion. In northern countries in Europe, it's more developed as an open possibility. So it's really ask for to organization, to educational partner, to start to think in a different way, to change the culture, to change the organization, to change the education. And this is really hard because we need to understand why we have to change and how we have to change.
Why and how.
Yes.
Yeah. And of course, this has all to do with the fact that we need people for professions, for jobs. And it's hard now everywhere to find them.
Yes, we work with the matching between the demand side and the offer side. So the first resources today are skills. And the employability of people is made through our skills that are both technical and life skills. And at the same time, we have a lot of work possibility that remain uncovered because we don't find people. But we see that there is a big percentage of people that stay at the margin of the market. They stay outside. They are inactive. Or they are marginalized. So they can stay outside of the market because it's a personal choice, it could be. But in a big amount of the cases, it's not a choice. It's because you are not considerable able to stay in the work. And if you're growing up with the context that say to you that you cannot do it, you start to believe it. But that is not the reality.
Are employees aware that they have to do something to reach those people they don't reach so far?
I don't know if all the companies are aware of that. I mean, when we talk about diversity inclusion, often we thought about gender, age, culture, religion, sexual orientation,
disability.
But disability is one of the vulnerable. It's the other vulnerable, like people with poor social economic background, or people that don't have the skills requested from the contest, are left behind. And even in some cases, women, mother, can become a vulnerable population, because if you don't have the social services that are needed in order to better compare and combine work with care, or if you don't are able to better share care, educational or domestic work within the family, there is a problem. But it's not something that cannot be done in a different way. It's something that we have always done in a way, but yeah, we can change it.
There are always people surrounding you saying, we have always done it this way, and that's a good way.
Yes, of course, because when we start to talk with companies and with people, of course, if I always worked in such a way, I think that this is the better way possible. But you can see and you can come in a reality like this one, that we are here together today, and you can open your eyes and your mind looking that in other countries and in other realities, things are doing in another way. So it's possible. What we have to see is to understand what we can do and what can we do in a better way, and finding also the solution to our problems, because as you said, the not availability of person for specific profession is a reality. So if we widening our capability to look around us, even looking at the person, the category of person that we are not habit to look at, it's something that can make the differences. And it can make the difference for the company, but for the life of the people at first and for the society. Because if I understand how to enhance the capabilities of a person with disability, I can change his or her lives. I can decrease the expenses, the social expenses.
People become involved in society.
Yes.
They become involved in work. They have also maybe the pride of having a job and being active.
And yes, and a person believes in himself, herself. It's really have the possibility to change their reality and also the reality within its context. And also the organization can have a really important and positive change, because the team changed the way to work and became aware of another way to make empathy with other, can develop emotional intelligence. It can understand how to do things simpler, but with more efficiency.
So
it's really something that can have an impact and a positive impact, but you have to start and to start to invest in that. So, and the change ask for time, and you are not sure how long does it takes in order to see the results of the change.
What is here the key role of the vocational education and training as an education system? How can it contribute to that, that changing mindset, and maybe also changing internal workings of companies?
I think that vocational excellence can help from one side to changing the way young people or other adult people, because learning to learn is a process that needs to be developed all around our lifetime.
It never stops.
It never stops. Vocational educational excellence can work in order to invent, identify new ways to educate, to train people using technologies, using groups, changing really the way to help and support people in developing technical and life skills.
And that will change then also the inside of companies.
Yes.
Because of these lifelong learning or new, younger people coming into the companies.
Yes. And these will change the company too, but also the capability to start a dialogue and an active dialogue with a reality that is outside, usually outside of the schools, no? But the contamination between the reality that are working day to day with the requests of the market, but also in an evolutionary way to looking at the future, looking how to be sustainable and to change and to create value for the future, can suggest to the vocational educational excellence to find new path of topics to be trained in
to,
the schools.
To change, modernize the curricula,
yes.
To use new ways of
new ways
teaching,
of
etc.
Maybe you can tell us something about differences between regions and member states in Europe. Where do they have to cope up in some ways? For example, you mentioned Northern Europe. In Northern Europe, many more women are employed nowadays, but that's not the reality in every part of Europe.
In southern, in Mediterranean countries, as I'm from Italy, but also in Spain, in Greece, and in Poland, there are a way to think that women are not right for some kind of industries. I mean, some kind of industries are a male culture industry, so there is a very big gender division in industries and in professionalism. And these bring the path of person since they are very young. Because not only in the secondary level of school we have to work on gender biases. But
So a young girl even maybe doesn't think about some employment because she only sees men in there.
Yes, and they are only a habit to say, oh, this is a work for men. But if you start from very young to make role modeling, so let them know what kind is that profession, because during time, professions and industries are changed. Technology has really changed the world of work. So something that maybe in the past were more difficult to do because of physicality.
And nowadays sometimes it's robotized. So.
Yes, so it's not a matter anymore.
But still the old images of the professions can be still very, very lively. They're still there.
They are there and they are like growing up with example or with taught, and sometimes even teacher have this kind of old-fashioned idea of industries and professions. So it's very important even for companies to go into schools and showing that now is a different world compared to past, and so that a profession is this new way. These are the instruments that you can use. These are the skills that are requested. Everyone can do it if has the tools and the organization of work that allows you to afford that kind of challenge that your profession gave to you.
In many parts of Europe, jobs are looking for people instead of people are looking for jobs. But I understand in Southern Europe, there's still much youth unemployment. Is there a special reason for it, that it's still there?
Yes. The problem of need, so not in employment, in education or training person, young people, usually between 15 to 34 years old, it's a real problem unemployment is a problem, inactivity is another problem. So the problems are different, the criticalities are different. What are the causes of that? The main causes, especially in the south of Europe, are connecting to the distance between the educational world and the economic world, the organization companies world. Indeed, studies show that when there is more decentralization of programs, so the schools or the territories are able to build programs in a more free way, where there is stratification, that means different duration of courses, and stratification in terms of horizontal stratification, that means different topics or that can be studied, as well as when there is the built of dual system that here in Netherlands is well realized as well in Germany, but not in other part of Europe. Not only dual system, also the construction of vocational system, professionalism built together with the territory, with companies. These kind of elements allow countries to obtain lesser level of needs. And between students that had made a professional pathway of study, the percentage of need, it's very sure.
So what you need is a more regionalized approach in which the companies and the vocational schools work together. And of course, the gap between, let's say, the educational world, as you call it, and the companies must be shortened.
Yes. I mean, where differentiation of path are possible. So, of course,
a greater variety.
Yes, there is a variety of possibility, but the vocational education has its dignity, its recognizement, both in teacher, both in the society, both in family, because still nowadays in some countries at least there is like a hierarchical consideration of educational path. So there are some that are considered better than others, but this idea is not so connected to reality. I mean, students that attend vocational education finish their pathway and they find quite immediately a job. So while in other case, people that has attended a more academic path need years and years in order to find out their ingress, their entrance in the labor market. So it's really something that we have thunk about and to let people understand. So it's a cultural element, it's an organizational element.
But it has very strong structural causes, these inactivities.
Yes.
Much more than that education is not there.
Yes, of course, it's not only this one. We have another big problem in the southern countries, that is undeclared work. So we have a very big percentage of need, but you have to understand that in that percentage there is undercover work that is
what we call the black market.
Yes, the black market, and this is
so the black market is in itself a sort of a signal of flexibility of the labor market for these in many ways disadvantaged groups. So it is their sort of
it's not
the way they can survive.
Not really for me, because in that case you are no any kind of support or sustain. If you have any accident, doesn't care who you are or what you were done. You are outside of the market. So the important thing is to fight with black market, but really fight with it. I mean, there are percentage of weight of black market that in Poland is really amazing than in Spain and in Italy too. So it's really something that have to be afforded. Of course, it's not easy because you have to understand how to do that, but it's not impossible.
Yeah.
And another problem, if you want, is the dualism of the system. I mean, in some countries, at least in Italy, but also in Spain, there is like an insider-outsider problems because people that enter in the market with a very strong protection, and considering that the working time is growing up, so the pension comes later in a person's life, and this kind of person that have developed their competencies and have occupied the best position in companies cannot be changed. So young people cannot occupy that position. Yeah. And this is another problem, as well as another problem is in these countries is fixed term contract that are used in an improper way. So you can use it in order to try the person to better know them or to answer to a flexibility of the market that is real. But sometimes this doesn't happen. And in fact, in these countries, the percentage of contracts that are transformed after 3 years permanent contracts, it's very slow.
That same problem that we have in the Netherlands also. And the government is trying to do something about it, but it's not very easy. Before you came in, all the conversations we had made me personally very optimistic because we heard about all those pioneers everywhere in Europe being successful role models and giving inspiring examples of employees and educators and students working together.
Innovators in all kinds of green sectors.
But when I hear your story, I think there's still very, very much to do.
Yes, there is still a lot straight to work.
What would be your number one, let's say, priority in this field for, let's say, the next European Commission? So the successor of Mr. Schmidt. If you could give that person, they say, do this in those next 5 years.
Yeah, Mr. Schmidt is Nicolas Schmidt, the commissioner for all those things for social affairs and employment.
I think that the first thing is to face the net problems, but it's not a very easy question because the problem with it is to find out who they are and how to reach them.
The people not in education, not in employment, not in training.
So yeah. There are people that maybe are looking for a work, but they don't find it, or they are people that are not interested in working, or they are discouraged, so they stay outside. And it's very difficult to understand who they are because you can count them because the people can cover four kind of situation. It can be employed, it can be in education, it can be both in education or employed, so both, or you can do or you are outside of the market.
Yeah.
And then you're marginalized.
And you are marginalized. But also when we thought about NEET, we have to have in mind that we have different kind of NEET.
So and you have to address that with different approaches.
Yes.
People who are long-term outside education and employment and training, for them, of course, it's the point, how do they find a way an entrance,
yeah,
which fits them, and people with care responsibility, you have to look at how can we make intelligent combinations.
Yes, and this is the necessity to better make like an analysis of how kind of need we have to do and we have to face.
In many European member states, the labor markets are concerned more or less a national thing. But as we learned from all those centers of vocational education, we can learn pretty much from each other. And we can also learn from different cultures in Europe. You told us we have a lot to do. We are not on the mountain already. So maybe the next European Commissioner should call you when he or she starts the work.
I don't know. I'm available, of course.
But
I can do my best, even in try to make theory practice, because of course it's easy to talk about this kind of problem. It's very more hard to bring theory into practice. It's possible. We have done that. Of course, J Group is a multinational of work. So we are in 34 countries. Yeah. We are
also
more
in the Netherlands.
Yes, we are more than 80,000 people. So it's easy. A small company can say to you, okay, I have no time, I have no resources, I hardly face my daily effort. So how can I do that? How can you do that? You can do that making like networking with other realities around you, working with your association in order to see the direction and to work in that direction, and also try to work for a better future. I mean, if you spend time in training person with apprenticeship, with contracts that allow young people to start to work in, you are allowing them to, yes, to build competencies, and maybe they tomorrow will go in another place. But if all the companies in the territories do so, you will have more people that are anyway capable people with the competencies that are needed by the territories. So, okay, the people that I choose can go other ways, but I can bring other people that are anyway valuable.
Thank you for having this conversation, Rossella Rico.
Thank you. I hope that is useful.
Zo, dit was Betrouwbare Bronnen, aflevering 371. Deze aflevering is mede mogelijk gemaakt door Platform Talent voor Technologie en natuurlijk ook door de vrienden van de show. In de beschrijving van deze aflevering staat nog meer informatie over onze gasten, over het congres in Amsterdam en over de Nederlandse en Europese initiatieven.
En één ding, Jaap, we horen het ongeveer iedereen zeggen, hè? We hebben banen die mensen zoeken. En je zou zeggen, daar moeten we het ook maar eens over gaan hebben. Op weg naar 22 november in Nederland. Want dit is echt niet een vraagstuk dat alleen buiten Nederland zich afspeelt. We zien het heel sterk, juist ook in ons eigen land.
Toch nog een beetje, zoals je in het begin al zei, de olifant in de kamer. Het speelt overal een enorme rol, maar we hebben het er te weinig over. En dan nog iets heel anders voor de vrienden van de show en alle luisteraars eigenlijk. Volgende week is in Hilversum de Dutch Media Week. En op dinsdag 3 oktober, dan zijn wij er ook bij met een opname van Betrouwbare Bronnen in het gebouw van Beeld en Geluid in Hilversum. En dat vindt plaats van 11 tot 1 uur, dus op dinsdag 3 oktober. En er is een speciale podcaststudio en daar kun jij meeluisteren met onze opname. We hebben dan te gast Willem de Bruin, historicus, over de relatie België-Nederland.
Over het drama van België en Nederland, die bij elkaar hoorden. Het is een letterlijk en figuurlijk hartverscheurend verhaal dat tot de dag van vandaag onze geschiedenis en onze politiek bepaalt.
Op Vriend van de Show komt er nog een bericht over. En als je geabonneerd bent op de nieuwsbrief, dan zie je die vanzelf. Maar alvast voor je agenda, dus aanstaande dinsdag 3 oktober van 11 tot 1 in Beeld en Geluid in Hilversum. En je bent van harte welkom.
Wij hopen u daar te kunnen begroeten.
In elk geval, tot volgende keer.
Betrouwbare Bronnen wordt gemaakt door Jaap Jansen in samenwerking met dag-en-nacht.nl.